Good morning, afternoon, and evening, everyone. Welcome to the 25th episode of the FPL Wire, powered by Dreamset Go. We are recording ahead of Game Week 27. I'm your host, Zofa, and I'm joined today, fresh from his appearance on the FPL show, Big Man Bakar. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Zof. It was a good week. The FPL show was great. And even this game week, it started off really well. I have already hit a century. So things are going well. I have I had the bench boost activated. So I'm looking good. But unfortunately, I had Bruno captain last night, so that kind of pissed me off. But other than that, things are going well.
How was the experience on the show? Okay.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Actually, it felt surreal. It was a great experience. I love chatting to everyone over there, and even after that, the response of my family, friends, was very overwhelming. People calling me, my mom to congratulate. I mean, friends, relatives, family, friends, felt great.
But you
it was almost as if I had graduated or gotten married. So felt really weird. It's great.
So we outside of friends and relatives, anybody called?
We got an email. We got some interesting emails.
Yeah, a lot of people, but let's not get at that over here.
No. Let's get into that over here. I saw BB Junior's email has come. I think you're halfway through to the Pakistani dream of becoming a corrupt politician.
Okay, let's not further get into that. This is an FPL show, and let's keep it at that.
What about you, Ella?
As always, I'd like to remind you that we do this for FPL, and that's why
you do this for FPL.
I think it's very debatable if he does it for FPL.
It's objective. Let's just leave it open to opinion whether I do it for FPL or not.
What about you, Ella? How was your game week?
I activated my bench boost as well. My defense did really well. Rudiger, Shaw, and the jammiest clean sheet ever from Maitland Niles. I absolutely love seeing that. What a result that was. It must be terrible being a Brighton fan watching that game. And I got 6 points from Tete as well. None of my attackers did much, except for the one who did, who was my captain, Harry Kane. I'm on 84, minus 8, so net of 76. But I've got 7 players, including captain. So I'm hoping to join Bakar in the triple-digit club. What about you, Zof? How was the week?
Decent. I think 79 points. I played my wild card. The defense really worked well, as usual. I think defense has been key to keeping me afloat this season. Like, again, your Shaw, your Martinez, the City guys. Cancelo obviously let us down once again. I'm hoping he plays the next few games at least. But good shape overall. And we'll talk about it further. Right, let's kick off.
I was just realizing, even on the previous pod, we didn't mention the United-Chelsea game. At all, it was such a nothing game.
It's so forgettable, right? And I honestly didn't even feel like talking about it because we knew it was going to be a nil-nil almost, right? It was literally the most nailed-on nil-nil possible.
Let's just address that for a moment. How much of a snooze fest was this last weekend of football as well as midweek? I think except for the Spurs game, I haven't found a single game that's been enjoyable. Like, I think the players are tiring. I think the whole thing is just drawn out.
No, there's all the thing with lockdown players also mentally fatigued, not being able to go out, the restrictions. It's all piling up now. It's been almost a year. So we can see light now at the end of the tunnel, though there's talks of fans returning and all that stuff. So I'm confident we're at the tail end of it now.
I had the misfortune of watching the Palace Fulham game on Sunday evening. And I don't think I've watched a more boring game in my life. It was an absolutely horrible experience.
The last 30 minutes were nice, actually. So I watched the Leicester game till Barnes got injured, and then I switched over to the Palace game. The last 20-30 minutes, Fulham were just piling on the pressure.
In the first 45 minutes, I think there were one or two shots, and that was from a set.
Zero shots on target.
Zero shots on target. And I don't know, I could have probably spent my Sunday evening doing something better.
Shout out, while we're on this, shout out to Luke Disciple, who triple captained. He's one of my favorite people in the community. Triple captain Gareth Bale. And you love to see something like that coming through. So well done, Luke. Great timing. The signs were there, and I'm happy it came off.
Lovely pun. Right, let's kick off. Yeah. A quick word about our sponsors. Let me pull up the slide. Dreamset Go is a global portal for fans to gain access to sporting events around the world. Accommodation, flight tickets, hospitality, stadium visits, everything can be tailored exactly to your requirements. They also do celebrity experiences, which include masterclasses with your favorite sports celebrity, or something as simple as birthday shoutouts. You can find links to the products in the description below. The FPL Wire is a part of the Fantasy Scout Network, and all stats used in this podcast are taken from the FFS members area. Please sign up if you haven't already.
Also, in case you guys didn't know, we've also started an FPL Wire league. The league code can be seen on the screen for the benefit of the listeners. I'm going to read out the league code, DOC0YG. Make sure you join this league because there's some fun prizes for grabs for the manager of the week. We've already had two winners and they both reached out to us. Thank you. Congratulations as well. And the winner for the next game week wins a huge one. This is a shout out from Spin King Yuzvendra Chahal. He's represented India in cricket in both ODI as well as T20. And he's an absolute key player for us. Such a fun guy. I'm sure you want to win a shout out from Yuzi. So make sure you're doing well this season. This game week, rather. Now, just taking you guys through the agenda for this week's pod, we're going to be starting with Bucker stats as usual. We're going to be talking about Barnes replacements. About 1 million people bought in Barnes before the double game week 26. Now, I think everybody is hunting for a replacement at the moment. We're going to be talking very briefly about Spurs and Liverpool because both have had a slight change in shape and we want to address that. Something to monitor before the games happen in the night. Actually, it's worth mentioning that we are recording this pod before the set of games on Thursday. So we haven't seen the last three games in the week. We're going to be talking about when is the best time to deploy the free hit chip for those that have it pending. And the little murmurs of a fixture reschedule in game week 36 and 37, we're going to be just addressing that. After that, there's a lot of conversation about people wanting to sell Bruno at the moment. People are not really sure about Mo Salah at the moment. So we're going to be talking about big hitters. After that, we have the game week talking points, if at all anything worth mentioning in the game week that went by, captains, hot fixtures, our own teams, and the Q&A. So we'll start with you, Bakar.
Yeah, so as always, I have stats for our listeners and our viewers this week. I have two stats this week. The first one is regarding the Brighton defense. So I was looking at the numbers and one thing I noticed is that Brighton are best in the league, even better than even Man City for big chances and XG conceded in home games this season. Now that is incredible given that whenever we think of Brighton, we think of them as you know, a mid-table side who are probably going to be, you know, fighting relegation or something. But they're actually best in terms for big chances conceded of all teams in the league, which is absolutely shocking. And I've never really seen a mid-table team, you know, have these kind of numbers going into March with such consistency, which makes it all the more sort of surprising that, you know, they tend to overperform their expected goals conceded week in, week out. And you talk to Brighton fans and they'll tell you that they dominate games for periods and then they make silly mistakes and they
underperform, I'm guessing.
Exactly, underperform their XGC. As I'd call it. So I ran a comparison to assess their defense home and away. At home, they're conceding 4.7 shots in the box per game, as opposed to 6.8 away. Big chances conceded per game at home are 0.7, which are best. That figure more than doubles to 2.1, which is 13th in the league away from home. Average XG conceded per game is 0.7, which is again best in the league at home. And that figure again increases to 1.2. XG conceded per game, which is 10th in the league. So as you can see from the numbers, while Brighton's defense away from home is kind of mid-table and mediocre, at home they're very stellar. The reason why I quote this stat is because a lot of managers are actually contemplating whether or not to free hit in 29 and which players to go for. So this stat right here tells us that a Brighton defender could be a very viable option going into game week 29 at home to Newcastle. Newcastle themselves, they're bottom for big chance in XG away from home this season. So that tells me that, I mean, you're not going to get a better opportunity because I think a lot of managers are going to overlook Brighton's assets because they're probably going to look at recent results and they're going to probably say that, you know, they're probably not in the best of form. But in my opinion, I look at it as an opportunity to gain ground because people won't be looking at Brighton's defense in 29.
The thing is, after the Brighton game, they have United, Everton and Chelsea. That's the real problem. But if you're buying budget bracket, it's worth a punt, I reckon. Also, when it comes to Newcastle, it's an even better fixture than it was previously because Newcastle in the past 2 weeks have started to look a little good in attack. I thought they've been doing pretty well with St. Max back. And I thought Almiron and St. Max have been causing the opposition some trouble. But both are looking doubtful, injury doubts at the moment. So yeah, even more reason. When it comes to Brighton, they have that saying in Hindi, right? Nazar utar lo. I think there is some sort of evil eye that's on Brighton at the moment. I mean, even I was looking at the stats, they're second for XG and second for XGC, second best for XGC in the last six game weeks. And that game against West Brom, I don't think it's related to football. I think there's some sort of evil eye on Brighton at the moment. And obviously the fact that the Zambian witch doctor. And the fact that they have Neil Maupay playing as a striker. Even Connolly, oh my God, that sitter that he missed, absolutely just need to stay a little calm. I think all three of us could put that ball at the back of the net. It is just, I think the strikers are the problem. I wrote about it during this week as well. You know, if Brighton do survive, they should survive because they've been really good. And if they buy a decent enough striker next season, I think he's going to be one of the value picks next year.
They could be the Villa, how we've seen Villa this year.
Absolutely.
Massive underperformance.
They need a clinical finisher.
Exactly.
So another thing I think about Newcastle, I read some reports today about Matt Ritchie and Steve Bruce having a bust-up. So Monday Night Football, they did this whole coverage about how the goal was conceded because Ritchie, who was subbed on, he didn't convey the instructions onto the pitch clearly about who was supposed to rearrange according to the formation swift. And Bruce completely threw him under the bus after the post-match. He said, I told Ritchie didn't convey the instructions. So Newcastle is not a happy place right now.
Not a happy place at all. Happy hunting ground for those betting against Newcastle, though.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So the second stat I have is regarding the Chelsea defense. Since Tuchel has taken over, Chelsea are best in the league for shots inside the box conceded, big chances conceded, XG conceded, shots on target conceded, goals conceded, and clean sheets. I can just go on and on. I mean, you look at whatever stat, they're topping the defensive charts since Tuchel has taken over. I mean, I'm sure Zoff must be very happy. Chelsea fan right now hearing these numbers. So these numbers are nothing short of exemplary, and they highlight the incredible value that someone like Rudiger is offering just at 4.6 million. Another implication these numbers have for managers this week is that chances are likely to be far and few between for someone like a Calvert-Lewin. So if you own Calvert-Lewin, I personally have him on the bench this week. I don't really see much joy for Everton at the Bridge this weekend. What do you guys think?
So I love the Chelsea defense right now. Right? I like winning 1-0, 2-0 than winning 5-3, 4-2 and all that stuff. I like defensive stability. I like clean sheets. So I like what Tuchel is doing, but the team is a little bit, I wouldn't say dull, but at the same time, it's not exciting to watch. It's not very, they're not that many people getting into the box. You're not creating that many chances. So it can be a little bit frustrating at times, but we're in a good place overall, and I think we're well suited, especially for the Champions League under Tuchel in this setup.
So Rudiger is a definite buy. Even the fixtures until game week 34 are ridiculously good. Everton, Leeds, West Brom, Palace, Brighton, West Ham, Fulham. I mean, that fixture lineup screams clean sheet points. If somebody wanted to double up on your defense off, second choice?
Probably Aspi over Alonso, because I think Chilwell had a decent game against United. You can see him getting minutes along with Alonso with Champions League and all that stuff. But Aspi has been getting forward a decent amount. And that other centre-back role, I think, will be rotated between your Christensen, Silva, Zuma and all that stuff. Both the guys on either side of the centre-back are pretty secure.
You reckon Aspi is nailed?
Yes, absolutely.
And so he's moving ahead. So there's some assist threat as well. And you mentioned he's on set pieces too, right? So there's a decent amount of attacking threat as well, right?
Yeah, he's not on set pieces, but during corners and all that stuff and free kicks.
Yeah, he gets up, right?
He gets up for it. And he's actually pretty good at them considering his height.
I mean, if Emi Martinez didn't exist, I'm sure we would be giving Mendy at 5.1 serious consideration as well, because that's some serious value for a keeper who's likely to keep so many clean sheets.
Absolutely.
Just while we're on that topic, I'll post this question, because a lot of people have wildcarded now in 27. They've wildcarded after the BB. Emi or Mendy, if you were to go for a keeper?
See, now, we look at the fixtures, right? Now, the fixtures after 30 for Villa, they turn for the worst quite significantly. So I think at this point, I'd actually go for Mendy. And you have to bet against Villa, right? Ultimately, you see what they did against Sheffield United. And they are definitely on the decline rather than the up, I would say. So if wildcarding now, I'd probably go for Mendy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. The only difference is Villa have one game more to play. So that's just one other thing to consider. But yeah, I'd look at Mendy too.
Again, it depends on your 29 strategy and all that stuff. We'll talk about that later.
All right. Cool. At this point, I just want to talk about our Patreon. We have had a very healthy response in the last couple of weeks. So thank you so much for that, guys. It really, really motivates us, pushes us to keep going. And it helps us reinvest back in the pod. There's a new mic in place as well. We've started a Patreon, and you're just basically buying us a beer or a coffee week on week just to support us and because you like us. And that's that. You can support us by visiting patreon.com/TheFPLWire. And I just want to give a shout out to our newest patrons in the Jimmy Tire. We have Espen Restad Hansen, Nomdat Cabbage, Robin Smith, Paritosh Sangvi, Stephen Sesniak, that's Swanee. Thank you so much. He's a regular listener, has given us great feedback on the pod as well. Nishant Was, Richard Alfin, Azim Khan. Thank you so much for the support, guys. We really, really appreciate it, and keep it coming.
Thank you.
All right, first up on the agenda, we have Barnes replacements. What are you thinking, Zoff? All three of us own Barnes? I think Bakker doesn't.
I don't.
Zoff, what are you thinking?
So I had a look at the few candidates, right? And I think it really comes down primarily to two guys, Jesse Lingard and Rafinha. So I've got a table up over here. This is using the comparison tool at FF Scout. Now, no player has created more chances than Rafinha over the last four game weeks. So in terms of creativity, he's head and shoulders above everybody else. Now, in terms of shots, though, shots, Lingard, I think, is far superior. You have XG non-penalty of 0.96 for Lingard and 0.83 for Rafinha. But I think that stat is a little bit distorted, right? Like Rafinha just takes so many shots from outside the box, so many speculative shots that it all just adds up in terms of XG. So we look at, you look at XG on target, Lingard's at 1.1, Rafinha's at 0.62. That shows to me that the quality of the shots is nowhere near, like, you know, 1.5.
Actually, I disagree with you a little. Sure. I was looking at the stats too. He's got some more shots in the box compared to Lingard in the box. In fact, I think they're very similar in their role as well. Both of them sort of have a free-flowing role around the striker where they're in and around the box and creating a lot of shots. Even Lingard, when I'm watching him on the eye test, he's not shooting a lot from close to the box, inside the box. It's pretty much as much as Rafinha. And Rafinha has outlets in terms of he's hogging the set pieces for Leeds as well.
Yep.
Well, I own Rafinha, so for me, it's an easier decision. But just adding that to your thinking at the moment based on eye test.
Mm. Another thing to
You're leaning Lingard at the moment?
So another thing to mention about Lingard is he can't play next week in game week 28 against Man United, in case anyone didn't know. But at the same time, Rafinha has Chelsea that week, right? So I don't think Rafinha is going to get any joy against Chelsea either. So I don't think that is really a determining factor either way. So as of now, I'm leaning towards Rafinha because I think his fixture in 29 and 30 is probably a little bit better. You have Fulham and Sheffield United. At that time, West Ham, I think, have Arsenal and Wolves. So I think the fixture run is slightly better for Rafinha. But at the same time, from 31, those fixtures get better for Lingard, where they get tougher for Rafinha. But I just feel Leeds can sort of score against anyone. The fixtures are there. You have your Liverpool game. They scored 3 against Liverpool at the beginning of the season with Van Dijk, etc. So you can expect them to score again. The City away fixture is probably one you have to cover them for, but after that you have Man United and some good fixtures after. So I think Rafinha will be the one for me.
What if Jota gets 45 minutes today?
See, the thing with Jota, right, there's a lot of matches for Liverpool now coming up with Champions League and everything. I think he's going to get minutes, but they're going to be a little bit scattered. So I'd want somebody who's a bit more nailed on, and I think Rafinha can match him in terms of output.
Too early for you, for Jota, you reckon?
A little bit early. Maybe another, give him a week, 2 weeks. And he was out with appendicitis, I think, in midweek. So I don't know if that's going to flare up. I want him to get 1 or 2 weeks on the pitch, see him get 70, 80 minutes before looking again.
Not interested in the Villa myths?
Who are they? I think we have El Ghazi.
Ghazi and Traore.
Traore, no. Yeah. I think better just go for Jack. Yeah. Bakker, you're smiling away. I'm curious. What's in your mind?
Nothing as such. I was just...
He's happy listening to us.
You concentrate on what you're saying. Why are you looking at me?
I thought so. There's some evil thought that came up to your mind that you're not sharing with us.
No, nothing.
I have no idea what's happening there. All right, and I'm just going to throw some more names. I want to actually, just because of the fixtures that we have, and that fixture against Leeds in game week 28 for Chelsea, Mason Mount outside shot, what do you reckon, Sof?
Mount is an interesting one because he looks to be the most nailed-on attacker under Lampard. He's taking a lot of set pieces. Sorry, not Lampard, under Tuchel. He's taking a lot of set pieces. But I think there are better options in terms of, like, you know, in terms of goal involvement, in terms of actual goals. I think there are better options than Mount out there.
Formation-wise, he's playing in the front three, right?
Right, because what Tuchel is playing now is a striker and sort of these two floating number 10s up front. So he's one of those guys and he's consistently been getting selected. But the thing is, it's still not clicking, right? If the formation was clicking, we're creating a lot of chances, scoring a lot of goals. And I said, yeah, this is the way going forward. But I'm still not sure Mr. Chelsea, like, you know, is the right way to go yet.
Yeah, the only reason it'd be tempting, and I think it's a good punt right now, is because of the fixture. It's a pure fixture play. And they've got a good run of fixtures for a good midterm, and if somebody is looking to chase in the league or something, decent option. We didn't speak about 5.2 million, probably one of the best value assets in the game, Bukayo Saka. He has a game as well in 29, Spurs and Burnley in the next two. But what's interesting about the Arsenal picks is 30 to 38, I think they're top of the season ticker for the end of the season. Any interest there? The only caveat I'd like to mention here is with Saka is that Arteta's looking to favor and look at the Europa League more closely. And we saw that Saka didn't play in the Premier League this game. But I feel like this rest is the only rest he's going to get. And he's going to be continuing to start in the league. What are your thoughts there?
Bakar, what are your thoughts on this whole topic, the whole replacements for Barnes?
Yeah, so coming to this, firstly, on your discussion regarding Rafinha and Lingard, I prefer Rafinha. Hands down, I've noticed a real improvement in his numbers of late. So I take into consideration the spell since Lingard has joined, and I compare his numbers with Rafinha. Rafinha is actually third in the midfielders for expected goal involvement since then, while Lingard is actually top among midfielders for overperformance in terms of his XG. His XG is actually only 1.23, which is not even in the top 10 for midfielders. And he's top for overperformance in terms of XG. One thing I noticed with Rafinha is that he's averaging a big chance involvement almost in every game. I don't recall him going through a match over the past five or six games where he hasn't had a big chance involvement. Either he's creating big chances, or either he's ending up on the end of them. So it's actually very heartening to see that as a Rafinha owner. So for me, it's a bit of a non-contest, particularly when I consider that Lingard's going to miss game week 28. I still feel that Antonio is the one to go for if you're looking at a West Ham asset. I think the pick is Rafinha. I like Saka as a shout as well, but what worries me there is Arteta's comments on rotation very recently, where it's very obvious that he seems to be prioritizing Europa League. So it's a bit of a tough one, but I would go with Rafinha hands down.
So why be less worried about Saka? As he's 5.2 million. He's not taking too much pocket change out of your pocket at the moment, you know. So that's one of the reasons. Also, when it comes to Rafinha and Leeds, I mean, one thing that's just something that I've noticed about Leeds in the past two or three games is they're playing good football for about 25, 30 minutes in 90 minutes, you know, in the past two or three games. They're not on it. They're not constantly hammering the opposition for throughout the game. They're just having good spells of 20, 25 minutes. Like, even the last game, it was the first 10 minutes where Leeds did much. I remember the first or second minute, there was a chance from Bamford to Rafinha. Rafinha was almost through. And then Rafinha had a chance right at the end. But outside of that, Leeds didn't do too much. Just a little worried there in terms of how consistent they are at the moment.
Yep. Consistency is a big issue for Leeds, right? Against Villa, they created almost nothing.
Absolutely.
Another thing I've noticed with Rafinha is that his average position of late has been far higher than it was usually. In the past four or five games, he's playing much closer to Bamford. So that's very heartening to see.
Let's just recap quickly just for our listeners. Your top three picks for Barnes replacement. You first, Elad.
I own Rafinha. So between Lingard and Saka, I think if your squad can accommodate Lingard, I quite like him because there is upside in the game against Leeds in game week 27. And generally, when somebody's playing against Leeds, it's the runners. You would expect Antonio to occupy the two centre-backs. And the runners tend to favour, but Leeds is also pathetic on set-piece defending as well. So you would expect Antonio to, you know, bully their central defenders and get something out of that game as well. I'd still pick Lingard number one, Saka number two. And my third option would be if you can, if you're looking for a double trade, if you can somehow upgrade to a Son because they have a fixture in 29 as well. And they've got a great run of fixtures, 30 to 38. So if you're restructuring your squad and you can upgrade, find that 3 million additional, I'd do that upgrade as well.
Fair enough.
That actually is my first preference.
Bakar?
Yeah, I mean, if budget's not a problem, then obviously I prefer Son as well.
Let's assume budget is a consideration.
Yeah, exactly. So I prefer Saka over Lingard.
Right, so for you, Rafinha, Saka, Lingard.
Yeah.
That is, for me, it would probably be Rafinha, Lingard, and then Saka. So, but I think it's pretty much consensus that we all favor Rafinha as the top replacement, right?
But the one thing, one caveat, I'm not as cold as you are on Jota. If he's showing some sharpness today, playing 45 minutes, looking good, looking like he's fit and not rusty, I'm happy to punt there. I think there's enough upside for me to take the gamble.
There definitely is. And I think Liverpool need that spark. But as we'll talk about now in the next section, I'm curious to see how that formation now sets up. So it's a good way to segue into it. Let's talk first about Spurs, about the attacking setup, Ella.
Okay, so I'll just mention this for the listeners, is that there was a slight shift in formation, and Mourinho, for the first time or second time all season, showcased an extremely attacking formation. Or what was happening was Kane was playing central inside the box, and there were two wingers. And what happened is Sergio Reguilon, he was a main difference maker in this entire setup, where he was so far up the pitch, it allowed Son to drift in a little, and he sort of took on Kane's creative role. He created, I think, 7 or 8 chances in the game against Burnley. And there were two, Bale was playing quite centrally and Kane was playing quite centrally. And generally, Spurs are not in the top tier when it comes to underlying numbers in attack. But in the last two games, we saw the signs of that in the second half against West Ham as well. They have been showing a lot of good underlying numbers. Now, was the Burnley game just a one-off? That's something worth monitoring, because the game against Fulham, which is happening later tonight, is the perfect test, because Fulham have been sort of a good team in defense as well. So I want to see how Spurs do against a defensively resilient unit like Fulham. I want to see if Mourinho is trusting Bale enough to play him in all the games, or it's going to be the same old thing where he's going to play, Bergwijn or Moura and Lamela, and just have two main attackers in that team and everybody else is just there to do the dog work. It's worth monitoring that. And if he's playing Bale and he's starting to show a little more, bravery than usual, then it's definitely worth doubling up on that Spurs attack. I even actually quite like Reguilon as a pick if he's going to be starting to play in that position as well, because he was very far up the pitch as well. So a good defensive pick as well. So just wanted to say that there's a shift in formation, and if they continue to post good underlying numbers, then it's worth doubling up on, maybe even tripling up, because Spurs have a great run of fixtures from 30 to 38 and a double game week pending as well. So there's enough upside.
Mm-hmm.
The only caveat again is, if Mourinho decides to, he's mentioned it or hinted it in the press conferences 2 or 3 times, where he said that he thinks that Spurs' best chance of getting Champions League football is through the Europa League. So taking that into consideration, do we see some random benchings for Son, Bale, etc.? That's the only worry I'd have. What are your thoughts?
Bakker?
Yeah, so the worry with Bale is that in the post-match interview, Mourinho actually said that he'd find it very hard to have Bale start every game. But in the same interview, he said that his condition looked fitter than ever. So it's actually hard to make sense of what he's trying to iterate with his statements. But if he starts tonight, then obviously he's going to be a bit of a risk for the Palace game. I expect him to start tonight, given that he was taken off earlier in the Burnley fixture. But I can see the upside. The upside is massive. And one thing I noticed is that when Bale and Son are playing, Bale, Son, Kane, all three of them are playing in the same team, that Son tends to take a bit more of a creative role, and he doesn't exactly possess the same amount of goal threat that he has when he's playing just with Kane in the team. So when you look at the stats for this week alone, he's top for all players for chances created. He created 7 chances in that game, including 3 big chances. While the goal threat came from Moura, Bale, and Kane, who had 7 shots inside the box between them. So, I mean, that's something worth keeping an eye on, given this new Spurs formation tweak.
No question about it, though. If given a chance, if somebody owns just Kane at the moment, I think Son is way above Bale in terms of second choice pick, in my opinion. If somebody wanted to punt, I'm all for punts, but I wouldn't recommend going for a Bale ahead of a Son. because the price difference is minimal at the moment, and at that point, Son is Son. You just go for him over Bale at the moment. Yep. Anything to add, Zoff?
Nope, I think you guys have covered it pretty well. Let's move on to Liverpool and this new formation.
Zoff, you saw Monday Night Football and the talk of a change in formation. Why don't you tell us about Liverpool's slight formation tweak?
So what they've done now is essentially the fullbacks have become a lot more involved. Now you have Trent playing sort of a Cancelo role. He had Robertson playing on the left wing. And what was strange was Salah was actually the guy keeping the width on the right while Trent was coming inside. And you had Mane playing the central striker role. So Carragher mentioned that this might be a one-off specifically to counter the tactics for what Sheffield United play with the overlapping centre-backs and all that stuff. But the comments from Klopp indicate that this is not a temporary change. I think he mentioned about getting the right players in the right positions, not leaving space to counter and stuff like that. So something to watch out for. And this is something that Bakker had also mentioned earlier about penalty box touches for Salah. I think they're already down this season. And I think that Sheffield United game, Bakker, I think he had much fewer touches than usual, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So in the 2019-20 season, he averaged 9.5 penalty touches per match. This season, that average has gone down to 8. And in the last 4 matches, that average has gone down to 6.2.
Right. So that's where I read it, your article. I remember reading it somewhere. It was your article, I think.
So that's worth monitoring.
Because exactly. 12.5 million is a lot to pay for somebody who's essentially a right winger.
And one other thing worth noting is he's
still getting those chances. I mean, when you look at his last 4 matches, he's still top, in the top 3 in the league for big chances, XG, when you look at his numbers. So that's a problem. Even when you look at the game against Sheffield, I watched the match and yes, he was kind of hogging the touchline, but he had 2 glorious chances to score. Had he scored from basically what was a tap in from that Robertson ball in, we wouldn't probably be having this discussion. And similarly, there was another chance where he brought the ball on his right foot, and that was actually a very good save by Ramsdale, who closed down the angle really well. So I think he was a bit unlucky not to score. Another thing I tweeted very recently was that he's missed all six of his previous 6 big chances from open play. So he hasn't been converting his chances, which is why we're having this discussion. But his numbers are still there. I mean, even if he starts converting it at what, like 25% conversion rate, he's still going to have 2 or 3 goals at that rate.
But Bakker, all bias aside, you saw that Sheffield game. Let's say if Liverpool persists with that formation again against Chelsea tonight, who was looking more threatening in that game against Sheffield, Mane or Salah?
Mane.
And if that persists, would you be tempted to shift? Make the shift to Mane? Because I, in my head, there's no doubt if Salah's playing the winger role and if Mane's playing central, Mane's the better pick if he's persisting with that formation. I probably will
assess how things go over the next 3 or 4 weeks before jumping on Mane straight away. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, fair enough. And also, it's also because he could, I mean, the game against Sheffield was against 3 centre-backs. The game against Chelsea is probably going to be against 3 centre-backs. So it probably could be just a system countering thing because the system that Chelsea plays is also 3 at the back. So I think it's maybe worth noting the Fulham game and then deciding what you want to do about this situation.
And also where Jota comes into this picture.
Yeah, where do you think he plays?
See, I don't think he's very effective as much on the wing, but I think that's where most likely he is going to play, or maybe even at centre forward. I really don't know because he's a very versatile player, right? He can play in any position across the front 3. But there's going to be rotation now, I think, going forward.
Yeah. Well, the fullbacks are also looking good. Trent, quality-wise, and
Trent's numbers were good. And Trent was very threatening that game. The best I've seen him play in a while. So if you're going to pick a fullback, I think Trent is definitely looking more attractive now.
But Robertson's position, I thought, was also quite good. He's far, both of them at the moment. And Curtis Jones, I think it's worth mentioning how many chances he had in that game as well. I think he had a free role behind Mane and Firmino. Mane and Firmino occupied a lot of defenders, which is why he got a lot of space as well. So just worth noting. I'm not sure it's a pick yet, but just worth looking at.
Right. Let's jump in.
I mean, while we talk about their fullbacks, it's also worth mentioning that their defense still looks a bit shaky. I mean, having watched the game as a cutback owner, I had my heart in my mouth when he nearly scored an own goal, which was ruled out for offside. And then there was that McBurnie chance, which I mean, we've seen so many of those, you know, McBurnie missed those week in, week out. And then even right at the end, there was Burke went clean through and he sort of hit his shot straight at Adrian. So I would have sort of felt more comfortable had they not conceded those big chances. Because, like, when I'm watching someone from a premium defense, I don't expect them to concede those that many big chances in a game. So so I still don't think that they're worth the value, Trent and Robertson.
Okay.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the next section about the free hit. So all three of us have that free hit chip available. Let's just do a quick survey to see when you're planning to play it. LR?
33.
Right.
I'm open to playing it in 20. I read your article and it convinced me. So why don't you just give the information to the listeners?
First? What I'll just walk through first, let's just look at the fixtures as they are. Now let's look at game week 29 first. Now the appealing fixtures over here are Leeds, Fulham and Brighton, Newcastle in terms of the ticker. So what I really think in this week, right, you can get away with quality, not quantity. Now let's look at the fixtures one by one. You look at Tottenham, Villa. Let's say if you have Son and Kane and Martinez, is it really worth adding another Villa defender? You're going to be cross-playing them. Your ceiling for points is low. It's unlikely that your attackers and your defenders...
Zoff, just back in a minute, yeah?
Yeah, sure. Are really going to do very well over there. So, and then you have Arsenal, West Ham. Arsenal are going to be right after the Europa League. But as we saw against Leicester, they can still turn up. So, I think there's potential for points there in terms of Lingard, Antonio, but... defense for either team, I don't know. Oba, Saka, will they even play? Because you have the Olympiacos tie 2 days before. I don't really know. Brighton, Newcastle.
And even if they do, Zoff, it's a hard game to call anyways,
precisely.
It?
You really don't know. It could go either way. But I'd in fact back West Ham over Arsenal in that game. But you wouldn't expect them to score more than, like, let's say, one or two goals. Right? I'll be happy just owning Antonio.
Exactly. It's the kind of game where any of the three results won't surprise you, would they?
Precisely not. So, and then you look at Brighton, exactly. Newcastle. You know, here probably something you can triple up on the defense, but in terms of attack, it's an absolute minefield. Your Trossard, Gross, Maupay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even want to go anywhere near. And then you have Leeds, Fulham, Rafinha, Bamford. Besides that, maybe Lookman, but Fulham don't really look like scoring. It's just all very meh. So, let's have a look at the...
Exactly. So.
Sorry, I'll just finish up, then we'll discuss. So now let's look at the game week 33 fixtures. Now, this is important because this week City, Spurs, Southampton and Fulham aren't playing because of the League Cup final. So you have some attractive fixtures here for Villa. You have Wolves with a good fixture, Liverpool, Leicester. So I think there's good potential over here, but it's very team dependent, right? I think if you're heavy...
United Leeds as well.
United Leeds, of course. So it's very team dependent on how your team is set up. And there are a lot of permutations. There might be a double for Spurs in 32. Spurs have good fixtures either side. City might have the league won by then. And there's also another curveball that's come in recently. So the Premier League has been trying to get in fans for the last few rounds of games. So initially the talk was they would have them in only for game week 38. But a lot of clubs are objecting, stating that the team who is home in 38 gets an unfair advantage. Which is probably true. So what they're talking about is having the last two fixtures with fans, 37 and 38. So the long and short of this, what might happen due to some fixture rearrangements, we might have a double game week 35, which might feature as many as, like, you know, six or seven teams playing twice. So it's worth holding on, I think, to the free hit. We should get some more clarity over this, maybe over the international break, game week 31. But I really don't think it's worth blowing it on game week 29.
I'm in agreement. I read your article and I made up my mind that I'm not going to be using the free hit in game week 29. At the moment, I'm going to be using it at 33, maybe later, depending on what news we get. And there is also what it's also worth mentioning that I currently have only one player from, I have two players from Aston Villa and Everton. I'm looking to sell DCL this week as well. So if Everton and Villa do have a double game week in 28, I might be open to free hitting in that game week as well, because both Villa and Everton will have a pretty good looking double game week. And in addition, I quite like the Chelsea versus Leeds fixture as a differential. Might return to an old friend in that game week if I'm free hitting.
Yep.
Bakar?
Yeah, at the moment I have five for game week 29, and with three free transfers I can get to eight. I'd probably take a hit and get to nine. I think that number is reasonable. I was are you speaking to Zoff while you were away, that I don't really see too many matches with a high ceiling in Game Week 29. So I think 8 to 9 players is sufficient and a very reasonable number. Game Week 33, I think, offers great value, particularly considering that most of us have Man City and Spurs. I mean, these days, we have Triple City. Everyone almost has at least one Spurs. So, I mean, to have that much amount of money on the bench is not wise. And if you can, you know, free hit in that week, you look at the fixtures. There's Liverpool, Newcastle, Villa, West Brom, United, Leeds. These kind of fixtures. I mean, Leicester, Crystal Palace. I mean, these are all, you know, fixtures where you can take some massive gains out of, given that, not many people will have differentials such as, you know, double United attack or Vardy or even Trent and Robertson for some game like a Newcastle. So, I mean, I think that saving for later is probably better.
Yeah, game theory wise, I think 29 is more of a defensive bench boost. 33 is more of a defensive free hit. 33 is more of an attacking hit with a more upside.
Precisely.
Agree.
Cool. We can move on. Anything to add, guys? We can move on.
No, not much. Okay. Let's move on. Now, we were discussing a lot of questions this week about the heavy hitters shifting out Bruno, Salah, etc. So, we have the captaincy matrix up here from Lego Mane for the next few weeks. And we're just looking at the fixtures in terms of captaincy. LR, why don't you take this?
Yeah. So, a lot of people are asking if this is the right time to sell Bruno. And I must say, we've looked pretty shaky and leggy in the last 2-3 weeks. We haven't looked that good, especially our performance against big teams. Solskjaer sets up extremely defensively. So if you're just looking at the next 3 game weeks in isolation, you're looking at City, you're looking at a fixture against a good defensive unit, that is West Ham, and then you're looking at a blank fixture. After that, 30 and 32 is where it gets tricky. You know, in 30, we are playing Brighton at home. Arguably, a fixture worth captaincy, but it's worth pointing out that in game week 30, Spurs play Newcastle. Most of us are going to be, owning Kane. And I think we prefer Kane against a Newcastle compared to a Bruno versus a Brighton in that game week. In 31, Bruno plays Spurs. And in 32, Bruno's playing Burnley at home. Again, in that game week, a lot of other options have, Liverpool have Leeds. So I think that's where our captaincy is going to go in game week 32 as well. So, you know, keeping these things into consideration, keeping the fact that, you know, we're not going to be captaining Bruno in the next 5 or 6 game weeks, I think there is an opportunity here to shift to another big hitter if your team permits it. If you don't own a Son who has an extra game in 29 as well, it's a decent shift to make. When it comes to Salah, though, I'm not sure yet, because the next 2 games are pretty decent. I mean, they're playing against a defensively resolute Fulham. They're playing against Wolves, who have also looked decent in defense at the moment. But, if you're funding a pick like Son, who has another extra fixture, if you're funding a pick like De Bruyne or a Sterling, who's a legit captaincy option in 27, if you don't own City at the moment, it's worth the roll of dice, given that we're not having too much captaincy threat from these picks. So that's the only thing I'd like to mention. Anything
while
to add?
You're at this, LR, who are you like to captain in Game Week 28? Don't you think Bruno is kind of like the standout captaincy pick in 28? I think he's going to be the most captained against West Ham.
That's a decent shot, because Liverpool play Wolves, City play Fulham, and I don't mind captaining a Kane against Arsenal as well in the North London Derby as well. But yeah, it's a tricky game. I think it's more a game to find some sort of a differential captain. But yeah, he's a decent captaincy shot in 28. I did not notice that. I overlooked that.
Yeah, West Ham, the thing is, it's not an obvious choice. I don't think West Ham is as easy a fixture as it was in previous seasons, right? West Ham are quite defensive, resolute, and United will have the AC Milan game 2 days right before this. So players are going to be tired or whatnot. I don't think it's as clear-cut in 28. I'd like City, agreed, for example. You see Gundogan maybe benched midweek in the Champions League. It could be good for the Fulham game, KDB. So it's a bit open that week.
Yeah, I think both of y'all are pretty covered in this direction, because I think both of y'all own Kane and Son. So there's no thought about selling one of these big hitters, because who are you going to sell for? Because I think both of y'all are tripled up on City as well. And both of y'all own Kane and Son. So there is no good enough substitute for the both of y'all. I don't own Son at the moment.
I don't own Kane personally.
You don't own Kane. I would make that switch, Pucker, because I think Kane is a better asset for the next 4 or 5 game weeks. I like his fixture against Palace. I like his game against Arsenal as well. And I think the game against City, I'm not confident. We played 6 nil-nils in a row against weaker opposition. So, yeah.
Bakker does not like this.
Yeah, his expression says it all.
No, I'm actually considering Bruno out for Kane, to find Kane in my team this week. So let's see what I do about it. But yeah, I completely agree.
There's no way you do that move.
Why?
Let's see.
In the past 6 games that United have played against the top 6, they haven't scored. So I mean, this game week is most likely going to be a blank against City as well. So that actually got me considering.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's going to happen is we're going to get a penalty against West Ham, and Bruno's going to fluke an assist against West Ham, and he's going to get a double-digit haul, and we're all. Whoever sold him, I'm not set on selling him at all. No. Whoever sold him is going to be crying.
Unless he gets injured, he's not leaving my team.
I like that loyalty. I like how you keep it simple.
I'm
not sure about selling him at the moment as well, because I do have Barnes and DCL who I want to sell before that. We'll talk about my team later.
Right, so let's move on. Quickly cover this game week's talking points, these fixtures. We've seen a lot of clean sheets. Not as many goals as we'd like. Anything you'd like to discuss specifically from this week's scorelines?
Okay, let's just go game by game. And if there's anything to add, we can do that. City, West Ham. City beat West Ham 2-1. City beat Wolves 4-1. Anything to talk about here? I think there's nothing that
I'm... Not much specific. Really in terms of
City. Just the fact that West Ham looked really good against City, and maybe their attack against Leeds this week is worth consideration. Yeah,
they countered
very
well.
City conceded 3 big chances against West Ham, and it's, I think they haven't conceded that many big chances in like 10 game weeks combined. So that tells me that West Ham attack, you know, they look fluid, they look good. So they're good shots this week against Leeds.
That's a good point, because the fixture after Leeds, West Ham plays United and Arsenal, and maybe you shouldn't worry about that because West Ham are in good attacking form themselves.
Exactly. So, and the good,
nice shot.
Something we've been talking about also, these teams which are not in any European competition, they definitely have an advantage during this fixture congestion and fixture overload, because they're able to rest players for an entire week.
Now that you mentioned that, it's also worth mentioning that the fixture congestion is sort of reducing. So these teams that are not in European competitions, they're going to get 3 days more rest compared to the teams that are in European competitions. Just something to add there.
Right.
West Brom, Brighton, the biggest anomaly game I have potentially seen ever. I haven't seen such a one-sided game. Absolutely did not deserve that fluky Maitland-Niles clean sheet I get. He's going to score a goal later tonight as well against Everton. But yeah, I feel bad for them. That's all I want to say. Anything to add about
Nothing
West
much,
Brom,
no.
Brighton?
Nothing much.
Leeds, Villa, we've already covered. Newcastle, Wolves is a no-go. Palace, Fulham. Fulham are defensively good. We know that. I think I just wanted to add that in the last 4 or 6 game weeks, they're in the top five teams defensively when it comes to XGC, big shots, big chances, and shots in the box conceded. So they're showing some good underlyings in defense. Just something I wanted to touch upon. Anything to add, Bakker?
No.
Palace,
no.
Fulham?
No.
Leicester lost 1-3 to Arsenal. Yeah, I think Leicester are no go until Madison and Barnes.
They were awful yesterday against Burnley. Schmeichel absolutely bailed them out. They should have lost that game.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people talk about Madison and when it comes to Leicester's creativity, but I think the impact of Barnes on Leicester's creative numbers is actually kind of neglected, and it's undervalued. It's Barnes is a big loss for Leicester as well.
Yep.
I'm not touching them until they're back.
Even Evans is out, right? Even the defense now. I think last game he played a back three with like Ndidi, Amate, and all that stuff. That's not a top four level like defense.
Yeah. I feel bad for them. I think Roger has done a good job. I normally hate on him, and he's one of the managers I like to hate on, but these are too many injury problems.
It's pile up, right? So many fixtures and everything's only. That's why you see City are doing well. Why? Because they have the depth of squad this season that's coming into play.
Yeah. Everton Southampton is actually worth talking about. What do you guys think of that game? We have a Southampton double game week as well in 27. Zoff, you saw the Everton Southampton game. Thoughts there?
It was an awful, awful match. Everton, they didn't create much. But what we need to actually talk about is Everton's new shape. Now you have DCL sort of playing. DCL no longer seems to be the focal point, the guy in the 6-yard box anymore. They've started switched to a diamond in which Richarlison and DCL are playing alongside, where DCL is winning the ball, getting knockdowns out. I don't think he had a shot in that game. So he's much less attractive as an asset than he was previously.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons I'm looking at switching DCL to Antonio, because he plays Leeds. DCL plays your lot, who are defensively really good. Hoping DCL doesn't do too much against Burnley, but yeah, the change in shape is something that I'm considering as well. Anything to add, Bakker? Everton, Saints?
No.
City, Wolves, nothing to talk about. Burnley, Leicester. I think we're covered. Yeah, Crystal Palace, United aren't playing good football at the moment. We look leggy, and I think 70% or 75%, just worth mentioning how good Luke Shaw was again yesterday. 75% of the chances we create are coming through Luke Shaw at the moment. It's just, it's an anomaly that he hasn't gotten, even yesterday, either for the pass that he gave to Rashford or the cross that he gave to James at the end of the match, should have gotten one assist at least in that game. I think it'll come.
I'm happy Henderson is going to be in goal apparently now for a few matches. That's more comforting. Yeah,
there's an article I read on MEN where it looks like United, there's something happened with De Gea, and United told Henderson to prepare to play in goal for the next 6 games. So I think the shift of guard is happening.
I think it's a good time also. They need to know where they stand for next season, right? Should they keep Henderson, sell him? So it's probably at a good time. You have to give him a run of matches at some point.
There were some contractual problems as well. I think Henderson made a little bit of noise where if this is going to go this way, then he doesn't want to stick with us next season, and he wants a starting place as well. So I think something has happened in the background.
Right. Let's move on to the next topic. Now, captains for game week 27. So obviously City having the double means they're going to be at the forefront in this discussion. So I have another matrix here by friend of the pod, Lego Mane, looking at minutes played by City players. Elar, would you like to take this?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to mention FPL Rhino's out here, because he's done a great job. And what he said is that assuming that one player has rested and that he's going to start the next 2 or 3 games is sort of lazy in terms of analysis that we do. So I think we should add a layer as well in terms of, he called that, you know, he said that he wasn't expecting Pep Guardiola to trust Riyad Mahrez in a fixture against United, which is why he called that, you know, he would play the games against West Ham. He would play the game against Wolves. And he's expecting him to play the game against Southampton, which are the money ball games, right? Because we've seen the big teams sort of cancel out each other in those games as well. In this game week, the double game weeks against United and Southampton. And Southampton haven't been defensively good, which is what we've seen. So the money ball lies in trying to guess who's going to be playing the Southampton game, because it's sandwiched between the United game and the Fulham game, which I personally think the Fulham game is a little more difficult compared to the Southampton game. So it's about guessing. I mean, on paper, Gundogan looks like a non-overthinking good captaincy option, because he was rested in the previous game. And he tends to play 4 or 5 games in a row. Do you think KDB has decreased output? I personally don't think so. I thought his positioning was good in the West Ham game as well. Thoughts there, Bakker, Zoff?
I don't think KDB has had any negative impact. Now, let's look at them as captaincy options, right? Let's have a look. Now, I think KDB is going to miss one of the next 2 matches, A and B. Another thing I noticed about KDB, he's not playing that support striker role anymore that he was before his injury. It's much more of a deeper role on the right side. I think even in the game against Wolves, he only created one chance, had a couple of shots. So I don't think personally he's worth 11.8 million. And you didn't mention the UCL tie. In fact, the Southampton game is actually sandwiched between the Champions League tie and the Man United game, which are both, you would say, more difficult fixtures.
After the Southampton game, they have the Fulham game, then they have the UCL tie, Everton game, and then there's a break.
Okay, I thought the UCL tie was before Fulham. Sorry, so my bad there. So, yeah, so the Fulham game definitely is a tougher game than Southampton. That being said, Guardiola has a little bit this thing about Southampton, that about them being a difficult side and all that stuff. So I don't know how easy he'll go for that one. So, but
I think he definitely plays United.
United is going to be the strongest 11 possible, right? Because of it being a derby and everything. That's probably the easiest game to predict his starting 11. But I think even against Southampton, I'm pretty confident of a Gundogan start.
Okay. Fair enough. I wouldn't worry about it. I think he starts all 3 and maybe gets rested in the Champions League game where they have a little bit of a cushion in terms of a 2-0 lead.
About Cancelo, I'm not so sure that he would play the Southampton game, because you'd want him for the United game, you'd want him for the Fulham game, possibly more. Maybe they'd want him for the Champions League for sure. So Cancelo, captain, has been talked about a little bit. I'm not so confident. Bakker?
I'm probably going to go with Gundogan. I was looking at his numbers, and his record against the top six is actually exceptional. He's had 5 starts, 5 goals, 1 assist, with an expected goal involvement of 4.13 in his 5 games against the top six, which is second best among midfielders for, in terms of minutes per expected goal involvement. So I mean, even if he starts the United game, it's not as if he's guaranteed a blank or something. I think there's a good chance he can do well there, and given that he was rested this week, there's a good chance he starts Southampton as well.
Worth pointing out that we conceded a lot of chances to an abysmal Crystal Palace as well. So I don't expect it to be a close affair.
I don't think it's a nil-nil here.
I expect City to beat us, very honestly.
I think your away record is ending. I think you guys haven't lost an away match in ages now, right? I think this ends here.
Yeah, so... and then he has Southampton, who are basically woeful. And I don't really see much... much point in guessing Pep, because he's kind of random with his selections. So I'm honestly just going to go with Gundogan and forget about it. I just think he's probably the safe option on paper this week. The other option who's worth considering is Diaz. He's kind of the boring pick, and we aren't really talking about him because it's probably way too boring, and it's not the way we kind of like to play the game, because we actually, you know, want to watch matches for goals. But it's worth noting that Diaz hasn't been rotated even once. The only since he's joined City, the only time he's missed a league game has been through illness, and that was against Spurs. United, as we've spoken about earlier, they haven't scored in each of their previous 6 appearances against the top six, and then there's Southampton, who are second worst for XG in the past 4 matches, second only to Crystal Palace. So I mean, 2 clean sheets are looking very likely.
Agreed. I'm not confident about Diaz. I think he misses one of the next
might
week,
be.
Personally.
It might be, because now he's actually has some more confidence in Laporte and Stones now, but I still think Diaz will play, but I'm not as confident as I was maybe a couple of months ago.
On that note, I mean, we'll address this here, because I have a third City spot open now. I can either go to a nailed-on Son, who's going to give me 90 minutes in every game, or I can punt on a Sterling or a De Bruyne. I was early looking at De Bruyne, but I feel like Sterling is a better punt. I thought he was great in the game against Wolves. He was unlucky to not get points. And looking at this matrix here, he normally gets one rest and then he starts for 6-7 games in a row, because his natural fitness levels are really good. Now, I'm pretty sure the strongest 11 is going to start against United, and I'm sure Raheem makes the strongest 11 for City. The game that I want him to start against is Southampton. I looked into Sterling's data, and he started the last 8 games against Southampton. The only thing that you take into consideration is it was never in a fixture congestion period. Mm-hmm. But Southampton tend to play a high line, so I'm wondering if Sterling plays in the game against Southampton. If you, just putting you both on the spot, because I have a third City spot open, if you had to punt on one of Sterling, Mahrez, De Bruyne or Foden for the third City spot, where would you go?
Bakar, you go first.
I think I'd probably go with Mahrez, given that he's likely to start the Southampton game.
I'd go with De Bruyne for me.
You go with De Bruyne over Sterling?
Yes, because I think ultimately you're not buying him for 1 week, right? It's not for a free hit. Ultimately, consistently, between from now to, let's say, the end of the season, I'd expect De Bruyne to clock far more minutes than Sterling.
It's probably for a week, Zof, because I'm converting him to Son in 29 for sure. So not for too long.
Okay. As a 1 week punt, then yeah, Sterling, I would say, has a higher ceiling than De Bruyne, but I like Mahrez too. The thing is, right, the wing positions are really competitive now, because Mahrez played very well. Foden, as we've seen, can also... Foden was surprising how few minutes he got, right, across the 2 matches. So you have to expect he's going to get some minutes, and I'd argue
he normally starts the big games, and he does really well against,
exactly,
in the big games.
So, like, you know, it could be Foden, Mahrez, it could be anything in that sense. And it wouldn't even surprise me to see Sun outscore those guys even with the double, because he has Palace. So it's not an easy call. Which way to go?
Just again, I'm putting you on the line. Would you all go towards a City punt or ignore the third City spot?
See, ultimately, they play the same number of fixtures, right? Because City play twice, 28, and then they blank in 29. So ultimately, you're buying 3 fixtures either way. I just go to Sun now.
Bakar?
Yeah, I'd go to Sun as well. I just think makes more sense.
All right. Cheers. Worth mentioning. But I think at the moment, both of you are thinking that Gundogan is the best captaincy option. Any thoughts on Kane against Palace and Antonio against Leeds as alternate captaincy?
I think those guys are actually probably the next best bet. But again, that now Palace, how many goals do we expect them to concede? Maybe one, maybe two. They're not going to commit any men forward in terms of opportunities for the counter attack, right?
But just because of this, I mean, if they're going to sit back, that game suits Kane. It suits Kane. If he's going to get shots off and his shots are looking really good at the moment, I think that game suits Kane, but you'd still go for the double game week.
Absolutely. You'd back the double game week. Because Gundogan, as we saw, even in one game, he can get what he needs to deliver a big haul. So but I like Antonio versus Leeds a lot, though. I think that game screams haul.
But not enough to push you and give him the armband over a double game week player.
I still can't trust a team like West Ham with the captaincy, right? Like you saw what happened against Fulham that week when you backed them. You never know.
If it was a single game week, you back him against Leeds, right? I mean, if it was a single game
week. But again, I'd always trust these big hitters. Like ultimately, I would still prefer, like if you look at the single game week guys, you have Salah who plays Fulham. I'd probably look over there rather than like, you know, at West Ham. But that's just my style.
All right, Bakar, Gundo over these two?
I still prefer Gundogan. City assets over the single game makers. I'm sure Kane and Antonio will do well this week, but I just kind of look past double game maker.
All right, cool. Any other fixtures we want to cover? Burnley, Arsenal, Sheffield, Southampton. I think nothing really worth talking about. I think we can move on to our teams.
Yes, let's move on. I think your team's up first, Elad.
All right, just for the benefit of the listeners, I'm going to quickly go through my team. I have Martinez as keeper. In defense, I have Cancelo, Rudiger, and Maitland-Niles. In midfield, I have Salah, Fernandes, Gundogan, and Rafinha. And in attack, I have Calvert-Lewin, Kane, and Bamford. As on my bench, I have Shaw, Barnes, and Tete. I'm likely going to do Calvert-Lewin to Antonio because I think there's enough upside in that move. Right. And I'm either going to do Barnes to Mahrez or something for a hit. Or if I feel like bringing in either Son or a City Bicketer, I might lose one of Bruno or Salah. At the moment, it looks like I'm more likely to lose Bruno. Let's see how Salah plays tonight.
I don't think you need to take a hit here. You can just do Calvert-Lewin to Antonio and you're fine. Or Barnes to Jesse Lingard because you can cover Lingard's fixture next week quite easily with your bench.
Yeah, agree. I just fancy Antonio more in that lead.
Absolutely. Well, given the choice, I'd always back Antonio. Yeah. But you have to get rid of Barnes anyway, right? Because Calvert-Lewin, you can still play him next week.
The only reason I don't mind making that move a week later worth mentioning is because I'm hoping Grealish is fit in the next week. So I'm going to jump on him early. So I'm okay to leave that spot open. Grealish, Jota, both that's worth monitoring.
That's a fair point too.
Yeah.
Right.
Bakar, you're next.
I have Martinez in goal, Cancelo, Diaz, Rudiger, Gundogan captain, Salah, Bruno, Son, Rafinha, Bamford, Watkins. On the bench, I have Areola, Kabak, Calvert-Lewin, and Shaw. So there are two options I'm considering, three options actually. The first is obviously I can save a transfer. The second is Calvert-Lewin to Antonio. And the third is to sell Fernandes to fund Kane. So with a hit.
Which you're never going to do.
So let's see. Let's see what I decide.
I like the DCL to Antonio move this week, personally.
Are you not concerned about Calvert-Lewin having a potential double in 28? We haven't heard much about it, but Quellen still thinks there's a slight chance of that happening.
Even if he does have a double, I like the Leeds fixture that much for Antonio.
All right.
I think it's an easy save.
I think it's an easy save.
Who would you bench now? Let's say you bring in DC, Antonio for DCL. Who are you going to bench from the slot?
Bruno.
Yeah, Bruno.
I guess Bruno probably, but still you could get a dodgy penalty or something. I never feel comfortable benching somebody. Like, all you take is City score, then United might commit men forward. I can't bench somebody like that who's potentially like, you know, on penalties, set pieces and whatnot.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Or maybe just split the value with the Leeds guys. Bench one of Bamford or Rafinha. Probably just that.
Probably, but it doesn't feel like a move you have to make.
I won't bench Rafinha for sure. His numbers are incredible.
Besides, I know he's not going to do that. So I don't think it's necessarily, it feels a bit forced.
He stopped reading my mind.
I know you too well now, bro.
Unfortunately.
Right. No, my team is, see, and we can tell already, our teams are actually really similar, Bakar. I think the only one or two differences. I've got Martinez in goal, Cancelo, Diaz, Rudiger, Son, Salah, Bruno, Gundogan, Barnes, Calvert-Lewin, Kane. on the bench, Fabry, White, Shaw, and Brewster. So for me, it's going to be the easy Barnes to Rafinha move this week. Gundogan captain.
Just what wanting pointing out actually, if people are on wildcard at the moment, it's a good time to select Foster as a second keeper because he started the last game. And if they do turn up in the next few weeks and tighten up the defense again, it's good to have a backup keeper.
It would be a really tough decision this week, right? Because we saw this happen with the other previous day, double game week for Southampton. You had to see Pope outscore McCarthy, got 3 points. So I'm sort of glad I didn't bring in Foster. I won't have to make that decision this week. Emi can just play.
No, just for, you know, even if you're playing Emi, just as backup.
No, I totally agree. I'm just happy I don't have to make that decision this week because I'd always back the double game week up.
Fair. But and it's more tempting because the one game is against Sheffield United, who don't look that great in attack. So,
but that being said, I think now that, like, you know, the pressure is off, they were actually really good against Villa. I liked how they played. So I think they could actually get a result against Southampton. And we saw Lucy quite worried about Villa losing that game because, you know, Sheffield are getting that little bit of boost now.
Yep.
All right, I'll move to the Q&A. We've got 5 questions. First up, the question is from Tausif Alvi. How many players is it mandatory to have for Game Week 29 if you're not free hitting? So off this one's yours.
So it, again, we discussed earlier, right? It's not about quantity, it's about quality. If you have, let's say, 3 Fulham players, couple of Newcastle players and all that stuff, it's not really that great because you'd expect Leeds to score against Fulham that week. So ultimately, I say, look at the fixtures, look at the 4 fixtures and look at the guys who you expect, A, who can do the most damage to you in terms of rank, and B, who have the highest point ceilings.
Got it. Pucker, for some reason, was disappointed when you said it's not about quantity, it's about quality.
Because he's loaded up on Fulham, right?
I think he's loaded up on a lot of things at the moment. Talking about the DMs, but anyway. Next question is from YKM. And this one's for you, Bakar. Looking at Leicester City and with the form they're in, is it time to go elsewhere?
I think so, yeah. They have Brighton this week, right? And Brighton at home are really strong. I'd probably look at offloading Vardy. Even Pereira, I think you can keep because he has Sheffield United at home next week. So I expect a clean sheet there. But I think Vardy is too expensive at that price to keep, given that Barnes and Madison are in the team. And I don't think that Iheanacho plays Vardy is as much of an influence because I was noticing last night that once Iheanacho came off, Vardy was far more involved as well. So with Iheanacho on the side, I don't really like Vardy at that price.
All right. Next question is from FPL Teacher. An interesting one, actually. I didn't discuss this with you guys. When is the best time to use the triple captain for those with it left? I have the triple captaincy left. I'm not fully tempted to play it in the City double game because I just can't predict who's going to get 2 starts. So I personally think that there's potentially a Spurs double game that's going to be coming in the future where you're going to be able to rely on a Kane or a Son who are likely going to play 2 games. So I think that's probably a better time. But if you're confident that one of these City attackers is going to play 2 games, I think we're going to have 1 or 2 double gimmicks. And maybe because of the noise that Geoff mentioned earlier, where we're going to have a double gimmick probably in 35, 36, 37. Those are the weeks that you can look at. I don't even think it's a problem to play the triple captaincy chip in a single week as well. If you have one of these premium teams in form, play against a Leeds United or something, I don't mind that as well.
Great.
Next question, I think final of the day, is from FPL Kai. Any Southampton players to be targeted for the double game week? And what's your take on Ings? Zoff?
I think personally, it is pretty much the fixture against Sheffield United plus 2 points, or even less if it's a defender for Southampton. So I guess if you have, you hold. I'm not even sure you would play like a Foster over a Martinez. It's not an easy decision. So I definitely wouldn't buy. And I was actually listening to the 45th minute pod with FPL editor Darren and a few guys who are Southampton fans. Right? They're very, very downbeat on Southampton at the moment. So I wouldn't go there.
You tell me that and I'm tempted to get in that third City attacker at the moment. Because that game could be 4-0 or 5-0. You know, there are points to be there, points there for the taking. So I'm wondering about Sterling. The moment. Genuinely, he's the one on my mind at the moment.
This would be your third time buying Sterling this season?
And I was talking to Prophet, a friend of ours from the Cons chat.
A friend is stretching it.
Yeah. But the point that he made is really good. I mean, there is no better time for me to have fun in this game, especially. And that, and I was feeling so bad after my fairly template wildcard, because how am I going to make ground if I want to? I mean, whether I'm going to finish 1.5 million or whether I'm going to finish 500K, it doesn't really matter, right? So it's the time to just really trust that instinct and make some crazy moves. So why not? Because I don't have much to lose at my rank at the moment. That's all.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense.
All right. That's it from us for this week. And we will probably see you next Tuesday. Remember that there are prizes there for the taking if you join our league. So please don't forget to join the league. Don't forget to hit like and subscribe. And see you on the other side. Any last words, boys?
Nothing much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please like and subscribe.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Good luck. Good luck for the double game week.
See ya.
All right. Anything else to say, Bakar?
No. I think it's better if we end it right now.
See you guys.
All right.